I want to start today with a scenario that I think is it's genuinely going to haunt the dreams of a lot of marketers and content creators listening to this right now.
Oh, I know exactly the scenario you're talking about. And it is an absolute nightmare for anyone who cares about their traffic.
Right. So imagine you spend 3 months building this massive new section of your website where you hire the writers and you optimize every single meta tag and get the technical SEO absolutely perfect.
And you finally launch it and actually manage to crack the code to rank in the top three results for your absolute dream keyword, which is a huge victory.
Exactly. You pop the champagne, you celebrate with the team, but then you look at your analytics a week later and the traffic just isn't there because the line is completely flat.
It's the silent crisis in search right now, which is this phenomenon where you can completely win the ranking battle, but still entirely lose the user.
I mean, we are just so conditioned to play that game of ranking to get a click because that was the deal for 20 years, where Google lists 10 blue links and you fight to be number one and you get the traffic.
But the rules have fundamentally changed because now a user asks a question and they get a synthesized answer from an AI. And often they never click a link at all. They just get the answer and leave.
And that completely changes the metric for winning entirely, right? Because it's no longer just about visibility or your ranking position on a page.
It really is about whether your content is clear enough and structured well enough to actually be quoted inside that AI answer. Because if you aren't cited, you might as well be invisible, even if you're technically sitting there on page one.
That is the terrifying part, but also the exact opportunity we're digging into today.
Because if you can understand how the machine decides what to quote, you can completely take control of that new visibility metric.
Welcome to the Content Ship Podcast.
This is a show about how content actually works today, not how it used to work.
We talk about search, AI systems, and the operational side of producing content that survives change.
And before we get into the weeds today, we want to share a quick note on how we put this together.
This podcast is created by people who care deeply about their craft, working intentionally with AI.
Not to replace human judgment, but to extend it.
That mindset is exactly why we built Content Ship, to give a single expert inside a company the kind of leverage and structure that used to require an entire team.
So if you are out there feeling that deep anxiety about dropping clicks and flatlining traffic, you definitely want to stay with us for this deep dive.
Because by the end of this hour, we are going to break down a 1 to 8 week playbook to actually fix this. And the best part is that it's not about rebuilding your website from scratch.
Not at all. It's really about changing how you structure your sentences so that machines actually trust them enough to extract them.
We're going to talk about a two-sentence rule that completely changed how I look at writing headers and structuring my arguments.
It's a total game changer that forces you to rethink the atomic unit of your content from the ground up.
So let's really unpack this because we have this source material titled AI SEO Optimization, Earn Citations and Mentions in AI Search, and it makes an incredibly bold claim right at the very top.
It says that AI search visibility is fundamentally an extraction problem, not a ranking problem, which is a massive shift in perspective.
I really want to pause there because that phrase can sound a bit like industry jargon to someone just jumping in. So can you explain that distinction and what the actual difference is between ranking and extraction?
Absolutely. This is the core paradigm shift you have to wrap your head around if you want your content to survive.
Because traditional SEO, the kind we've all practiced for a decade, was essentially just about proving relevance, wasn't it?
Exactly. You wanted to signal to Google that you contained the right keywords related to a topic so that Google would put you on a list, almost like a menu, and then the human user would choose to visit you.
Right. It's basically a billboard where you are waving your arms, saying that you have the answer, and begging the user to come inside the store.
But AI search, whether we're talking about Google's AI overviews or Perplexity or ChatGPT, is completely different because it's not acting like a billboard at all.
It's acting much more like an active researcher that is scanning for data.
It's not looking for a destination to send the user to. It's looking for raw material to build an answer with, which means it wants to extract a specific fact or a definition or a hard number.
So it's basically like a mining operation where the AI is digging for ore.
That is a brilliant analogy because if your content is buried deep inside a complex narrative, or if it's overly ambiguous, the mining equipment just can't lift it out.
So the AI just skips you entirely and goes to a source that is easier to parse and extract from.
It absolutely does, which explains a massive frustration I've heard from so many writers and content teams recently.
You can write this beautiful nuanced, incredibly well-researched article where you pour your absolute soul into it, but then you look at the AI answer for the topic and it's citing your biggest competitor.
And you look at their content and it's just basic and dry and simple, and you feel like you were actively punished for being a better, more creative writer.
I hear that all the time from people who feel like the machine just prefers dumbed down content. But from the machine's perspective, the better writer is often just introducing ambiguity.
We have to remember how these large language models actually function under the hood, because their primary directive is to avoid hallucination at all costs.
They want to be confident. They desperately crave certainty above almost anything else.
They do. So the source material puts it this way, noting that you need to be easy to extract, easy to trust, and hard to replace.
So if your competitor is getting that coveted citation, it's not necessarily because their domain authority is higher or their backlink profile is better.
It might literally just be that their sentence structure allowed the robot to confidently say that this is the definitive answer, whereas your beautiful text required the robot to guess.
That is just wild to think about, because we are now literally optimizing for machine confidence. But I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Please do, because I know exactly where you're going with this.
If we start writing strictly for machine confidence, aren't we just going to turn the entire internet into a giant, boring instruction manual and kill all creativity just to get a citation?
That's the universal fear, right? That we all just become robots writing for robots and the web loses its soul.
But I don't think that's the actual outcome here, is it? Because it's more about where you place that creativity within the architecture of the piece.
Exactly. The machine needs the hard facts up front to build its confidence, but the human reader still needs the story and the narrative flow to stay engaged.
You can absolutely do both, but you have to structure it differently. So let's get into the actual tactics of that.
Because the source material talks heavily about something called the throat clearing problem, and I think a lot of writers are going to feel personally attacked by this concept.
I know I felt personally attacked when I read this part, because we literally all do it. It's probably the most common writing habit in the corporate world.
Tell us exactly what throat clearing looks like in this specific context so everyone knows what we're targeting here.
Throat clearing is all that fluff we put at the very beginning of a section to warm up the reader, using phrases like, in today's fast-paced digital world, it is important to consider whatever the topic is.
Or when thinking about this incredibly complex topic, we must first look at the rich history of the industry before making a decision.
But I write that kind of stuff all the time, and I will actively defend it because it feels polite and it feels like I'm setting the stage and building rapport with the reader before I just aggressively hit them with raw data.
You're trying to be empathetic to the reader's journey, but are you telling me that empathy is now basically a ranking penalty in an AI search world?
That is such a crucial question. But empathy itself isn't a penalty at all. Inefficiency is the actual penalty here.
But they can feel like the exact same thing when you're sitting in front of a blank document trying to write an introduction.
Think of it this way. If you walk up to a hotel concierge because you urgently need the bathroom and you ask them where it is.
And they respond by saying, "Welcome to the Grand Hotel. We are so incredibly glad you are here. The architecture was designed in 1920 by a famous architect and the marble is imported."
That isn't empathy at all. That's just intensely annoying because I just need the bathroom right now.
Exactly. And in the context of search, the user is almost always in a state of immediate need. They are the person desperately looking for the bathroom.
And the AI model is essentially acting as that concierge. So if you force the AI to wade through three paragraphs of pleasantries to find the directional sign, the AI assumes you aren't actually a helpful source.
Real empathy in the age of AI is simply respecting the speed at which the user wants the answer to their problem.
Okay. When you frame it that way, with the AI as the concierge, that makes total sense, because if the answer is buried in the middle of the paragraph, the AI has to do extra processing work to locate it.
And doing that extra processing work significantly lowers its confidence score, which increases the chance the AI skips your content entirely and grabs the answer from a source that put the definition right at the absolute front.
So what is the single most important practical action we can take to fix this throat clearing habit?
The guide is incredibly specific on this point, stating that you must make the first sentence of every meaningful section answer the heading directly and immediately.
That sounds simple in theory, but I bet it's actually quite difficult to execute in practice when you're used to writing narrative flow.
It requires a lot of discipline, which brings us to the two-sentence rule that we teased in the intro, which is specifically designed for structuring definitions and key decisions.
Okay, let's workshop this two-sentence rule because I want to challenge it, since I think listeners might automatically assume it just means writing boring, robotic sentences.
Let's use a real example to test it out, maybe a concept you wrote about recently.
I wrote a piece a few weeks ago about keyword cannibalization, which is a classic, slightly dry SEO topic.
Right, and you probably wanted to make it punchy and engaging for the human reader so they wouldn't bounce.
Exactly. So my opener was something like, imagine you have two hungry tigers in a cage, violently fighting over the exact same steak. And this is essentially what happens when two of your web pages fight for the same search keyword.
I genuinely like the tigers. It's a very vivid image that grabs human attention.
But we have to put on our AI goggles for a second and ask how a large language model actually reads that specific sentence.
I assume it tokenizes the words and mostly just registers tigers and cage and steak.
Right. It has to process 4 or 5 metaphorical nouns that have absolutely nothing to do with SEO before it gets to the actual subject of the header.
So the semantic distance between the header keyword cannibalization and the actual definition is just heavily cluttered with zoo animals.
The tigers are basically just confusing the robot and creating noise in the semantic signal.
The model is constantly calculating probabilities and asking itself if this paragraph is definitively defining keyword cannibalization. And since the first sentence is talking about large cats, the confidence score plummets.
So does the two-sentence rule essentially demand that I have to completely kill the tigers and lose that imagery?
Not kill them, you just need to move them further down the page. So here's how you rewrite that exact concept using the rule.
Sentence one must be the direct, unambiguous answer. So something like keyword cannibalization occurs when multiple pages on your site compete the same search query, directly hurting the ranking of both.
Boom. That's incredibly direct, maybe a bit dry, but absolutely clear to any machine parsing it.
Right. That is sentence one, and the AI confidently grabs that for the extraction snippet.
And then sentence two or three is exactly where you bring the tigers back into the mix to reward the human reader.
So I would follow up with, think of it like two tigers in a cage fighting over a single steak.
Exactly. So you secure the citation because of the clarity in sentence one, but you still maintain the human engagement and the voice because of sentence three.
You really aren't losing the art of writing at all. You are just aggressively changing the architecture of how the information is delivered.
It's essentially journalism meets coding, where the inverted pyramid style is applied at the micro level of a single paragraph.
To a human writer who loves flowery prose, it can definitely feel a bit repetitive to start every single paragraph with a blunt definition. But for a machine, it's pure clarity.
The source material also mentions the match technique, which is a highly specific application of this front-loading concept.
It's all about matching the syntax of the header directly to the syntax of the first sentence, isn't it?
It is. So if your H2 header is what is AI SEO optimization, the very first sentence below it must explicitly start with the phrase AI SEO optimization is.
You essentially have to repeat the exact keyword immediately without any variation or clever phrasing.
You do, and I fully acknowledge that human editors generally hate this. And we'll leave comments asking why you are repeating the phrase we just read in large, bold font.
But you have to remember that the AI might be pulling that specific paragraph completely out of context via a vector search, so it might not actually see the header in the same way a human does visually.
By explicitly repeating the subject, you are mathematically confirming to the model that, yes, this sentence is definitely defining the exact entity you are looking for.
And there's a strict constraint on length for that opening sentence too, right? To keep the semantic focus tight.
Ideally, you want to keep that first sentence well under 25 words, avoiding building a labyrinth of complex clauses.
You just want subject, verb, and the direct answer.
I love how actionable that is, because any listener could literally go back to their top 10 highest traffic blog posts right now and just spend an hour rewriting the first sentences of their headers.
And that is exactly what the 1 to 8 week playbook suggests you do, because you don't need to rewrite the whole post. You just surgically fix the openers.
Okay, so we've got the writing style down. We know we need to front load the answer and move the tigers to the back of the line.
But the source material also talks deeply about structural design, specifically introducing this concept of modular design, which is fascinating.
What does modular design actually mean in the practical context of an AI crawler evaluating a web page?
Well, we naturally tend to think that AI reads a page from top to bottom linearly, like a person sitting down with a cup of coffee to read a book chapter.
But in practice, especially for retrieval augmented generation, which is how these new search engines actually function, they're usually just scanning for very specific segments.
They're essentially aggressively chopping your beautifully crafted page up into isolated chunks.
So my carefully structured narrative page is really just a bag of disconnected puzzle pieces to the AI model.
Exactly. And the critical question you have to ask yourself is whether each individual puzzle piece makes complete sense on its own, or if it desperately needs the other pieces to be understood.
This leads directly into the copy-paste test, which I thought was just a brilliant low-tech way to audit your own content quality.
It's the ultimate litmus test for modularity, and here is exactly how you do it.
You go to your article, highlight one random paragraph from the middle of a section, copy it, and paste it into a completely blank document.
Now you read it completely in isolation and ask yourself if it makes objective sense, or if it is completely confusing without the paragraph that came right before it.
If it's confusing in isolation, you fundamentally fail the test and you fail the extraction.
Because if the AI lifts that specific chunk out to answer a user's question, and the chunk relies on context that simply isn't there anymore, the AI will likely discard it and move to a better source.
What are the specific things that cause us to fail this copy-paste test? What are the primary failure modes we need to watch out for?
There are three big ones to look out for. And the first, and arguably most destructive, is the misuse of pronouns.
This is an absolute killer for extraction when you use words like this, it or they, without a clear, explicit reference in the exact same sentence.
Give me a concrete example of how a writer might accidentally do this in a draft.
Okay. Imagine a paragraph that simply starts with the sentence, "This improves results by 50%.
In a normal article, this could be anything from a software tool you mentioned in the last section to a new morning coffee habit.
Right, but if the AI extracts just that specific paragraph into a vector database, it have absolutely no idea what this actually refers to, so it categorizes it as a broken reference and ignores it.
So instead of lazily writing "this improves results," you have to be explicit and write something like "front-loading content improves results by 50%.
Exactly. You have to constantly restate the noun, which again feels slightly repetitive to our human ears, but it guarantees the chunk is completely self-sufficient.
What's the second major failure mode that breaks modularity?
Distance is the second trap, specifically long, winding sentences where the primary subject is at the very start and the verb is all the way at the end.
Like when they are separated by three different commas, a subordinate clause, and a parenthesis full of extra context.
Exactly. The further apart the subject and the verb are physically located in the sentence, the harder it is for the language model to parse the relationship accurately, so you have to keep them close together.
And what about the third failure mode? Because this one seems to trip up a lot of advanced writers.
That would be entity naming, which is a very subtle but dangerous habit where you call the exact same concept by three different names in the same article just to sound varied.
Oh, I do this all the time to avoid sounding repetitive, like I'll call it AI overviews in one paragraph, then AI summaries in the next, and then the answer box in the third, just to mix up the vocabulary.
I totally get that, because I always thought that was just a sign of a good, sophisticated vocabulary.
But to a machine learning model, you might be unintentionally introducing three entirely distinct entities, which completely confuses the model about whether these are actually the same thing or different concepts.
If you want to establish yourself as a definitive authority on a topic, you have to pick one specific name and violently stick to it, because consistency breeds machine competence.
It's so interesting how all of this advice, the front loading, the short sentences, the consistent naming conventions, it all sounds a lot like structural technical writing.
It really is, because the internet is rapidly transitioning into a giant unstructured database for AI models to train on.
And the content that acts most like a clean, well-formatted database entry is the content that inevitably wins the citation.
So we've heavily covered the writing and structural side, but there's a deeply technical side to this playbook too.
The source material talks extensively about technical friction and trust signals, and I really want to pause on this.
Because for over 10 years, SEOs have been aggressively yelling at us to fix our broken links and speed up our website load times, and it kind of feels like the exact same old chore list.
Why does an AI crawler which is basically just a massive supercomputer, actually care if my site takes 2 seconds to load instead of one, it's not going to get impatient and click away like a human teenager would,
right? It definitely won't get emotionally bored, but it will get mathematically expensive for the company running the crawler.
Expensive in what sense? Like literal dollars and cents?
Yes. Think about the actual physical infrastructure of these models, because every single millisecond an AI crawler spends on your site parsing bad code or waiting for a slow server response, it costs the search engine raw compute power.
It costs electricity and server bandwidth, which translates directly to massive financial costs at their scale. So Sitebeat isn't just a user experience metric anymore. It's a cold economic decision for the AI company.
100%, because if your site is computationally expensive to understand because you have endless redirect chains where link A goes to B, which eventually goes to C, the crawler is actively burning budget just trying to find the destination.
And eventually, the system's algorithm just marks your entire domain as low yield and stops trying so hard.
Low yield is such a brutal, robotic way to describe a website you worked hard on, but it makes perfect sense.
It's just brutal logic, because the AI wants the absolute path of least resistance to the ground truth.
If your competitor serves the exact same factual answer on a clean, lightning-fast, flat-site architecture, and you serve it inside a confusing maze of broken code and bloated JavaScript, the AI simply takes the competitor's fact.
Not because it subjectively likes their writing better, but strictly because they were economically cheaper to process.
That honestly puts a completely different spin on technical SEO, taking it from a list of arbitrary rules to a mission of lowering the computational cost for the machine to understand you.
Exactly. You are removing friction, and that exact same principle absolutely applies to the duplicate content problem as well.
Oh, right. Duplicate content has always been a major red flag in traditional SEO circles.
It has. But in the realm of AI search, the penalty isn't just a ranking drop, it is profound confusion for the model.
Because if you have three near identical pages, maybe a print-friendly version, a downloadable PDF version, and the standard HTML blog version, you are actively forcing the model to guess which one is the primary source of truth.
And if it happens to guess wrong and picks the worst version?
It might pick an incredibly thin variant, or a badly formatted PDF that it can't parse correctly, and you effectively dilute your own hard-earned authority.
You desperately want to present one clear, canonical version of the truth to the machine and aggressively eliminate all that technical drag.
Clean up the house and keep it simple. I've got it.
Okay, moving on to what I think is one of the most interesting strategic concepts in the source material, which is freshness.
The guide states that freshness is no longer just a ranking signal. It is now a strict citation filter. And what does that practically mean for us?
It means that an outdated, older page might still easily rank in the classic 10 blue links because it has a decade worth of backlinks and massive domain authority.
But an AI model will look at that same page and actively refuse to quote it in a synthesized answer.
Why would it ignore a high authority page just because it's older?
Because of the deep-seated fear of hallucination and presenting dangerously stale facts to the user.
If a user explicitly asks, what are the best mortgage interest rates right now, and your highly ranked article is from 2022, the AI mathematically knows that historical data is dangerous to quote today.
So it aggressively filters you out of the extraction pool, meaning you could rank number one in traditional search, but have absolute zero visibility in the AI answer box purely because you didn't pass the freshness filter.
So how do we practically fix this? Is it really just as simple as going into the CMS and changing the published date on the blog post to updated February 2026?
Please don't do that. That is the oldest, most transparent trick in the SEO playbook, and these trillion parameter models are way too smart to fall for that now.
Yeah, I figured we were totally busted on that old tactic.
To actually earn a citation, the core content itself must demonstrably change because the model dynamically compares the previous cached version to your new current version.
And if the text body is 99% identical, but the date magically changed, it immediately flags that you're trying to game the system. What actually counts as a real substantive update in the eyes of the AI?
You need to go in and replace a stale statistic with a brand new one from this year, or add a recent example of the concept that happened in the news recently.
Or update a specific tool recommendation because the software platform you're writing about fundamentally changed its user interface last month.
Or even add a completely new pitfall section based on current industry trends that didn't exist when you first wrote it?
It has to be a genuinely meaningful addition to the knowledge base, not just a cosmetic tweak.
It does. And here is a really critical technical pro tip from the guide regarding updates, which is to use the schema.org date modified property.
This is a specific piece of structured code that explicitly tells the crawling machine that you materially changed this content on this specific date.
You never want to make the robot guess when it was updated based on parsing the page text. You just directly tell it in the code.
That seems like a massive operational shift for content teams. Because instead of just relentlessly churning out net new blog posts every single week, maybe we should be spending half our total time just refreshing the old ones.
The guide actually recommends exactly that operational cadence, suggesting you systematically pick your top revenue or pipeline generating pages and put them on a schedule.
If the topic is highly volatile, like AI news or algorithm updates, you probably need to refresh it monthly.
But if it's a true evergreen topic, like how to tie a tie or basic accounting principles, a quarterly or biannual refresh is completely fine. Just do not let them sit there and rot.
I love that phrasing, do not let them rot. It's a great reminder.
Okay, we are going to take a quick beat right here because we've covered a lot of ground.
If you are listening to this and slowly realizing that your entire content strategy is completely stuck in 2015, you are definitely not alone in this.
This is a massive industry-wide shift that is catching huge companies off guard.
So if you're finding this tactical breakdown useful, please take a second to share this deep dive with that specific colleague who is currently staring at a traffic graph pointing straight down.
Because we're going to get into the really juicy advanced stuff next, focusing on how to essentially force the AI to cite you by leveraging brand identity and original microdata.
Okay, we are back, and I want to dive straight into this concept of brand, because the source material brings up this idea of identity resolution.
This is a fascinating layer of the puzzle, because the AI actually needs to confidently know who you are as an entity before it feels safe citing you.
That sounds almost philosophical, like the AI is asking, who am I?
It's intensely practical, though, so imagine the AI crawler finds a genuinely great, accurate fact on your website.
But when it tries to validate the source, it can't mathematically figure out if Acme Corp, Acme Inc., and the Acme Industry blog are actually the exact same corporate entity.
Or maybe your professional LinkedIn profile says you are the VP of marketing, but your website's about page still lists you as a freelance consultant from 5 years ago.
It encounters conflicting data points and naturally gets confused about your authority.
And when a language model gets confused about identity, it drastically loses confidence in the source material and starts creating fragmented, separate entries in its central knowledge graph for you, which completely dilutes your overall authority score.
So we urgently need to get our story completely straight across the entire internet.
You must ensure that your company about page, your executive LinkedIn profiles, your author bios on guest posts, everything needs to perfectly align.
You need to use the exact same company name, the exact same product naming conventions, and the exact same positioning statements everywhere.
Because you are actively building a definitive knowledge graph entry for yourself, and you want the AI to clearly see you as a singular, highly verifiable entity.
The source actually cites the APNORC polling summary right here, noting that a massive majority of adults are now using AI for their primary information discovery.
Right. And if that primary discovery channel cannot reliably verify your basic brand identity, you are effectively invisible to that entire segment of users.
Okay, so assuming we have our identity perfectly sorted out and consistent, how do we actually stop the AI from just aggressively stealing our information without credit?
That is the million-dollar question for every publisher right now.
Because I write a great helpful tip, the AI reads it, learns it, bakes it into its weights, and then just serves the answer to the user without ever linking to my site.
How do we structurally force attribution in that environment?
This is where you have to fundamentally move beyond publishing generic consensus information, because if your page just says the sky is blue, the AI has absolutely no reason to cite you for that.
Everyone on Earth knows the sky is blue. It's baked into the foundational training data, so it's just common knowledge.
Right. So to force a direct citation link, you must provide information that is uniquely and exclusively yours, information that literally cannot be found anywhere else on the web.
But I can hear the listeners right now pushing back and saying that not every company has a dedicated research department or the budget to commission massive annual surveys.
We can't all hire data science teams to find unique insights. So how micro are we talking here when we say original data? Can I actually do this on a random Tuesday afternoon?
You can literally do this before you go to lunch today because the guide calls this specific tactic microdata, and it is the absolute secret weapon for small content teams trying to punch above their weight.
Walk me through a concrete example of how I would create microdata today.
Okay, let's say you are an independent CRM consultant and you desperately want to rank for the query CRM implementation mistakes.
Okay, a standard boring article would just list the exact same generic mistakes everyone else lists, like poor employee training or bad data hygiene.
Exactly, and ChatGPT already intimately knows those points because it has ingested 1,000 articles saying those exact things, so it won't cite you for just repeating the consensus.
But what if you took the last 20 actual clients you personally worked with, opened a simple spreadsheet, and just tallied up exactly which specific mistake caused their project to stall?
That is literally just looking at my own email history and doing basic math.
Exactly. You just audit your own sent folder, and you discover that in 14 out of those 20 recent cases, the major stall happens specifically at the data migration stage.
Okay, so now I have a hard statistic that says 70% of projects stall at data migration.
But the crucial part is how you frame it. You have to explicitly frame it as your proprietary data. So you write something like, in an internal audit of 20 recent CRM implementations handled by our firm, we found that 70% of delays originated specifically in the data migration phase.
That is absolute gold for extraction.
It's basically radioactive gold for an AI model because it actively wants to provide statistics to sound authoritative, but it legally and structurally has to cite you if it uses that specific number.
It cannot just vaguely claim that 70% of projects stall without directly attributing the source of that exact number, because it's not general knowledge, it is a highly specific proprietary claim.
You just completely manufactured deep authority out of your own routine past work.
That is brilliant. So that specific tactic covers mini benchmarks, but what are the other structural ways to generate this microdata?
The second proven way is to document firsthand patterns, which is very similar to benchmarks, but much more qualitative in nature.
It's formulating a statement like we saw X happen consistently after doing Y.
Exactly. You share a direct observation from your own fieldwork. Like writing, we consistently noticed that client retention dropped by 15% whenever we removed the mandatory onboarding call.
That is a highly unique claim, fundamentally based on your lived experience, which again, the AI has to cite if it wants to share that insight.
And what is the third way to force attribution?
The third method is creating proprietary decision frameworks where you invent a unique named method for making complex trade-offs, like a specific 2x2 matrix or a named formula.
Wait, like the two-sentence rule we've been talking about this whole time?
Exactly like the two-sentence rule. Think about what we are doing right now. We are repeatedly talking about the two-sentence rule specifically because the source material we are referencing actually coined that exact term.
If they had just generically advised us to write clearly, we wouldn't be repeatedly referencing a specific branded concept.
By giving the framework a sticky name, they actively forced us to cite them as the creators of the concept.
That is so incredibly meta and just wildly effective when you break it down.
So the lesson is, don't just give out free advice. You have to package your best advice into a named framework or attach it to a unique data point.
Because generating this microdata is honestly the only real defense against the AI, just blending your hard work into the generic soup of the internet.
I love that strategy so much, but let's zoom out a bit because we've been heavily focused on optimizing individual pages and paragraphs.
But the source material explicitly notes that citations almost rarely come from a single isolated page floating out in the void. They actually come from cohesive topic clusters.
Right. This introduces the fan-out effect, where when an AI model investigates a specific topic to answer a complex query, it deeply looks for structural depth and a broad cluster of related interconnected content.
So you absolutely still need a robust pillar page for this to work.
You definitely need a central pillar page that comprehensively answers the big, high-level what and why questions about the topic.
But then, and this is the really key part for AI extraction, you urgently need smaller subpages branching off that specifically answer the how, the tools, and the common mistakes.
Why does that specific structure help with extraction? Why not just put all that great information onto one massive 10,000-word ultimate guide page? It goes right back to that concept of modularity we discussed earlier, because each of those highly focused subpages acts as a perfect, clean, isolated container for a very specific answer.
If a user explicitly asks, what software tools do I need for AI SEO, the AI can bypass the pillar page and go straight to your dedicated tools subpage to cleanly extract the formatted list.
It doesn't have to waste expensive compute power hunting through a massive ultimate guide trying to find the one section about tools.
It's that warehouse analogy all over again, where it's infinitely easier to find a specific box if it's sitting on clearly labeled shelf rather than burying it deep inside a much bigger unorganized box.
Yes, and the critical step is that you have to aggressively link all of them together using descriptive anchor text, which the guide mentions is modeled after Google's own SEO starter guide baseline.
That dense internal linking architecture essentially helps the AI clearly understand the hierarchical relationship between all these pages.
It visually shows the machine that you are a comprehensive expert on this overarching topic, and here's the mathematical proof in all these different hyper-specific sub-areas.
Okay, we have honestly covered a massive ton of tactics today, from front-loading and the two-sentence rule to technical fixes, proving freshness, generating microdata, and building clusters.
But here is the massive lingering problem that I know marketers are stressing over. I physically cannot see these AI citations in my standard Google Analytics dashboard.
So how on earth do I actually know if any of this incredibly hard work is actually paying off?
That is definitively the hardest part of this entire transition right now, because you simply cannot track this granularly like you used to track direct clicks.
You essentially have to treat your entire content strategy like an ongoing scientific experiment. So what specific metrics are we supposed to be measuring in this experiment?
The guide strongly suggests running these experiments in 30 to 90 day evaluation cycles and rigorously looking at four specific alternative metrics.
Walk me through metric number one.
Metric one is tracking your citation count and overall coverage, meaning you need to manually check or use an emerging tracking tool to see how many of your distinct pages are actively earning at least one citation.
You literally just go to Perplexity, go to ChatGPT, and manually ask the exact questions related to your core content to see if you are showing up in the footnotes at all.
It's manual, but it's the ground truth. And metric number two is analyzing your query class.
Query class is really interesting, because it asks whether you are mostly winning the top of funnel what is queries, or if you are successfully winning the deeper how to fix troubleshooting queries.
I would safely assume that winning the how to fix queries is significantly more valuable to a business.
Usually yes, because what is queries are purely educational, while how to fix implies high commercial intent and a user in pain.
Most corporate sites heavily over-index on writing basic definitions and massively underperform on deep troubleshooting. So if you can strategically own the how-to space, you are much closer to the actual money.
That makes perfect sense. So what is metric number three in the cycle?
Metric three is actively evaluating your snippet quality, which means that when the AI actually does quote your content, you need to analyze if it is quoting you correctly and in a way that aligns with your brand.
If the AI is actively pulling a sentence out of context that makes your product look bad, or is quoting a dangerously outdated feature, you need to immediately go into your CMS and aggressively rewrite that specific sentence to change the extraction.
You can actually actively debug your public brand perception just by surgically rewriting individual sentences, which is an incredibly powerful concept.
And what is the fourth and final metric we should be tracking?
The final metric is measuring assisted conversions by looking closely at the downstream signals.
Since you often aren't getting the direct click from the search result anymore, you need to see if you're experiencing a noticeable lift in branded search volume.
Are significantly more people typing your exact company name directly into Google because they saw you cited as the expert in a ChatGPT answer yesterday?
Or are your inbound demo requests steadily going up even while your organic blog traffic appears to be flatlining?
Right, because they found the definitive answer in the AI interface, subconsciously saw your brand name cited as the trusted source, and then later navigated directly to your homepage when they are ready to buy.
That is the fundamental new user journey we have to accept. It's no longer just search, click, convert.
It is now search, learn from the AI, remember the cited brand, and then make a direct visit later.
That new funnel definitely requires a lot of faith from executive teams who are used to last click attribution, but the emerging data definitely seems to back it up.
It really does. And frankly, it is the only viable way forward because the traditional organic click-through rate is dying a slow death.
The citation rate is absolutely the new currency of the realm.
So let's wrap this incredibly deep dive up, because we've gone through the entire 1 to 8 week playbook. And while it feels manageable, it's definitively a massive shift in strategic mindset.
It truly is. We are officially moving away from the era of earning clicks and fully entering the era of earning citations.
Let's do a quick hard recap of the biggest actionable takeaways for the audience.
Number one is that you must ruthlessly front load your answers using the two-sentence rule. Put the hard definition first and the narrative nuance second. And remember to not confuse the parsing robot with tigers in your first sentence.
Number two is that you need to intentionally structure your writing for modular extraction, ensuring you pass the copy-paste test so that every single section makes complete sense in total isolation. And please tightly watch your pronoun usage.
Number three is aggressively fixing the technical drag on your site, because slow load speeds, broken redirect chains, and duplicate content actively hurt the machine's operational wallet, which directly hurts your visibility.
Number four is proving actual freshness, realizing that you cannot just cynically change the publish date. You have to materially update the content with new statistics and current examples to pass the filter.
And number five is proactively forcing attribution by generating your own microdata, giving the AI a highly unique fact, a recognized pattern, or a named framework that it absolutely must credit you for, even if you have to audit your own scent folder to find it.
It definitely sounds like a lot of technical work when we list it out like that, but when you really boil it all down to its essence, isn't this essentially just a mandate to make fundamentally better content?
That is the beautiful irony of this whole shift. We talk so much about optimizing for cold, unfeeling robots, but look at the actual advice we are giving.
Be crystal clear, be incredibly concise, be factually accurate, constantly update your facts, and do not ramble before getting to the point.
That is exactly what frustrated human readers have desperately wanted from internet content all along.
Exactly. So this isn't about cynically gaming the system or deploying some shady black hat trick to trick an algorithm.
It is simply about executing the core fundamentals of clear communication significantly better than your closest competitors.
I absolutely love that perspective because it makes the whole process feel significantly less like a technical chore and much more like aiming for a new standard of baseline excellence.
And if I can leave the audience with one final crystallizing thought today, it is that the teams who are earning consistent citations right now aren't the ones frantically chasing a new software tool.
They are simply the teams who are obsessively making their content easy to extract, easy to trust, and incredibly hard to replace.
Easy to extract, easy to trust, hard to replace. I am literally going to print that phrase out and tape it to my office wall.
Thanks for listening.
If you want to put these principles into practice, visit www.contentship.io or subscribe for future episodes.
We'll see you in the next deep dive.